at SD Bullion. Our everyday low prices are already lower than the big boys' so-called flash sales. One of the fastest growing bullion companies in the country, SD Bullion, just claimed a spot on the prestigious Inc. 500. So you have to ask yourself, why haven't you joined over 30,000 new customers who've recently made the switch to SD Bullion for the lowest gold, silver, and platinum bullion prices? To learn more, go to www.sdbullion.com and enjoy the lowest prices in the precious metals industry, period.
Hey everyone, this is Elijah Johnson with SilverDoctors.com, and with us today is David Morgan from The Morgan Report. David, thank you so much for joining us today.
Well, thanks for having me, Elijah.
All right. Well, we haven't interviewed you since the election, so I don't know if you wanted to give your take on the election upset we saw with Trump getting elected and how that impacted the markets.
Well, I will give you a little bit of my thinking on it. First of all, if you go back to, you know, pre-election, I was asked, you know, my thoughts on it. And the first time I was asked was at the Minds and Money show in Canada in Toronto. It was, I forget, about 3 months before the vote. And I told the interviewer that I really thought it was like changing the captain on the Titanic, that the structural problems that were already manifesting could not be corrected by changing the president. And I made the metaphor extend by using the analogy that we could see, you know, a new band come in and play more lively music. Maybe a steerage moves up to the top deck and gets free champagne and caviar. And there could be this really good feel-good kind of a thing that, you know, the ship is back on course and things have been righted and away we go kind of a feeling. But the fundamental fact is that the ship has hit the iceberg and it's going down. So I wouldn't change my view on that. I was slightly surprised of the outcome of the election, I admit. As far as I'm concerned, again, the structural problems are so deep. And the month before the election in the Morgan Report, I wrote about the deep state and how important that is in the relative atmosphere that most people never even consider to be a factual part of the way the world is actually run. And because of a misunderstanding of that fundamental flawed view by most people with this left-right paradigm, believe that that perhaps things can change at the rudimentary level. Not to say that things won't change. I do think there'll be 6 months to a year, maybe even longer, where there'll be kind of a Trump euphoria with fiscal spending, which puts money in directly into the back pockets of the populace or some percentage of the population. There's staunch liberals right now that will become Trump supporters 6 months from now because their brother-in-law, sister-in-law's uncle got a job and their son got a job finally. And there's these, you know, programs that are government sponsored or really public-private partnerships that will be accomplished, and they'll be fixing the infrastructure, and there'll be lots of probably positive press about it, even in the mainstream, and things could look better. Just again, going back to my metaphor of, you know, the band playing lively music on the Titanic and, you know, free champagne for everybody and, you know, bright days are ahead. But that doesn't make the economy better. It may obfuscate the situation. It may appear to be. It may provide more emotional basis for feeling good or make America great. Aren't things going better? And in a sense, yes, but in a fundamental way to change the economy, to put us back on track where we can overcome this debt burden, that's not going to happen.
Can you expand on why you think we are on, as you say, like the Titanic? What are the fundamental reasons for saying that the economy is going to, it seems like you're saying, implode? It's inevitable that's going to happen. Can you explain for our viewers why?
Well, I think you have to just be objective. If you look at what happened with the 2008 financial crisis, from an objective perspective, we have not recovered from that. Many other commentators outside of myself have mentioned many times that, and I say it differently, but we're all basically saying the same thing, which means that the physical economy has no bearing on the stock market indices. So you can have a huge and increasing stock market euphoria, but that is not representative of the true physical economy. So if you go back to 2008 and what happened with the lying that went on with the subprime mortgages and the ratings agencies putting them up to triple A and then packaging them up and selling them off to people that were knowledgeable and some that were unknowledgeable, this is a complete and total fraud in a way. And yet, to perpetuate the fraud, we start with the basic fundamental fact that you cannot, you know, borrow yourself rich or print yourself wealthy. And this is still what continues to happen with fancy names like QET, Operation Twist, and other monikers that signal that the Fed knows what they're doing or central banks around the world know what they're doing. But the facts are that they do not know what they're doing, and they cannot overcome the inertia of a debt bomb that has already exploded in 2008. The other part of the metaphor, if you want to look at the Titanic, is it takes on water, and it takes on water slowly. And at first, it's just the bottom decks. In fact, most people are not even aware that the ship has hit the iceberg or is taking on water. But slowly, it starts to sink, and one side lists, and then the back end dips, and then it starts to go down. And it really doesn't go down quickly. It just takes on more and more water. So that would be my metaphor for what's going on with the crisis as it sits today, as we're doing the interview. It's taking on a great deal of water, but, you know, hey, the captain's on board, knows what he's doing, you know, things could be okay again. The reality is that it continues to take on water, even though things appear to be better. And then once enough water is taken on, it gets to this critical point, this inflection point or tipping point, if you will. And at that point, it sinks rather rapidly and, of course, you know, shoots to the bottom of the ocean. And, you know, are we going to be that strong? No, I don't know. I mean, no one knows how badly this will unravel. I am not as pessimistic, I think, as some that, you know, make comment in this area. I do think that there are, you know, structural things that are so ingrained and the worth ethic still holds throughout a lot of America and parts of the world. I don't want to make this America only. Heck, we're only 5% of the world's population. But nonetheless, there are ways to overcome it. And the more, you know, the individual liberty movement, if you will, or the truth movement or whatever, where people are actually more self-sufficient, the better off they are. And if you're not only self-sufficient, but you have a surplus and you're able to help your family, church, community, or what have you, in that context, of course, you can rebuild. So I think it's going to be a very rocky ride. I don't think, you know, the ship's going to the bottom of the ocean never to recover. That I don't think will happen. But I do think that we will be limping along for a while. And there has to be some huge structural changes. And, you know, to be fair, could those take place under the Trump administration? The answer is it could. I just don't think that the political will is there that it will. And it's impossible to pay back the debt. That's a mathematical certainty. So what has to happen is a restructuring, or the most oft-used word, reset. And how that really takes place is going to be very, very difficult, because no one can please everyone. And we all are responsible in some way. And that means we all should share the burden in some way. And how do you do that fairly? And the answer is you don't. It's impossible. It's absolutely impossible to spread the pain equally. It cannot be done so. So that's why the markets themselves are actually the best arbitrator of how it happens, because the markets will determine the winners and the losers. But since the markets are so controlled at this point and so distorted, it's going to be, the day of reckoning is going to be, let's say, more problematic than it would be if the markets were really free to determine the winners and losers.
So in the meantime, before this crash happens, when there's this, you know, Trump euphoria, as you were talking about, and people are thinking the economy is doing super well, where do you see the stock market going on one hand, and also where do you see the precious metal markets going?
I think the stock market will continue, even though it's overvalued by any metric you care to use. I think it will continue higher for a while. And I think the metals are going to be neutral to sideways probably to the end of this year, 2016. But I think about once Trump is sworn in January 20th, once that occurs, then I think you'll see the metals will start to move up again. I'm looking at 2017 to be fairly positive for the metals. I mean, in the case of silver, silver is kind of a good time, bad time metal. I mean, its industrial use is over 50% of the market. And so if you have, you know, good times are here again, or the perception that good times are here again, that could put greater pressure on silver for the industrial applications that it has. On the other hand, I think a lot of people can see through the situation as I'm describing it and will be moving in to hedge their stock portfolios. I mean, when something's at an all-time high, you can also look to how would you hedge that, and gold is a good hedge for a high stock market because it counterbalances it. Jeff Christian just spoke at the Silver and Gold Summit in San Francisco, did a very interesting lecture, and actually I interviewed him on my Mastermind series, and he pointed out that if you eliminate real estate and just go into all asset classes outside of real estate, stocks and bonds, basically ETFs, you know, options, futures, that gold physically represents about 1% of the total asset allocation of all money that exists outside of real estate. And if you do it with silver, it's only 0.02%. So very much according to his study, which he did for the last 10 years, the correct weighting into gold or precious metals really to balance a portfolio and get the maximum performance to the upside is to have about a 15% to 20% holding in physical metal. And that's a far cry from the 1% that's held now. So there's a lot of room for people, regardless of what the economic conditions are, if they want to optimize their returns, need to enhance their precious metals positions. And I think, you know, myself, and not that's me, I mean, I'll take that back. Once the word gets out, if it could get out, because it's, you know, the gold idea is pretty suppressed by the mainstream financial system, but there are a lot of people that do, you know, speak the truth and talk about it. So if it's better understood, let's say more in the mainstream, there might be more and more impetus to get into the precious metals, regardless of the economy, regardless of what your beliefs are, regardless of whether you think, you know, my Titanic metaphor holds water or not. And that pun was intended.
So you're talking about how if people basically just put, if they're investing in a way that kind of hedges them better, that they would have, you know, a lot more percentage of their portfolio in precious metals. So what do you think could bring people to that idea or start people looking towards precious metals as an actual investment?
Well, I think part of it is if I understood, you know, Jeff Christian correctly, I think he's going to start to make this, you know, more widely known, you know, through CPM Group, his company, as the managing director. And, you know, there's the internet. There's lots of ways to make it more known. I mean, basically, Nick Barishef was the one that started. I mean, he had Ibbotson and Associates do a study years ago on what the best portfolio allocations were, and they determined under current conditions about a 15% allocation to physical metal. We're not talking mining shares now in both cases. We're talking purely in the metal. 50% allocation made your portfolio perform better under all conditions. And this is what people want. If they really want to get the maximum return on dollars invested, you need to have a fairly significant amount of physical precious metal. But this is something, again, that isn't taught because Wall Street really doesn't get much of a commission for selling gold or silver, and it's kind of a one-time purchase. Whereas if you have a stock portfolio, there's always that phone call that could be made that says, you know, you've done really well on this stock, and this one isn't too good here, and so you should sell this one and buy this one. And by the way, we're coming out with a new offering, and then they can what's called churn, C-H-U-R-N, the account, which means that, you know, there's buy and sell orders, which keeps the brokerage industry going strong. Whereas, again, if you buy, you know, your, let's say, 15% allocation divided between, let's say, in Nick Barishef's case, gold, silver, and platinum, and that's it. You know, they're not going to get much return as a salesperson by allocating that much into the precious metals. And certainly that's that kind of dead money from their perspective because it's not easily churned or whatever. So, you know, it's kind of a tough nut. I mean, you basically need to educate people at a level. And the other, you know, resistance point from my personal experience is the financial planning community. This is something you're never going to read or learn or understand if you become a certified financial planner. I mean, there's people out there that are very savvy, understand it, and know it backwards and forwards as well as me or anyone else, be like a Jim Papava and others that are in that realm that certainly know that it's imperative, really, to have it. But the general people that go through and, you know, become a certified financial planner go by the book, and there's really a huge correlation between stocks and bonds, which means your risk is really doubled. It's not halved. It's really important to know that the correlation between stocks and bonds is extremely correlated, which means bonds don't protect you from an equity failure, and equities don't protect you from a bond failure. The only thing that protects you from an equity or bond failure is precious metals, but no one teaches it.
All right. Well, David Morgan, thank you so much for your time today. Before we let you go, did you want to share with the viewers where they can find you and any last thoughts you had?
Yeah, I'd like you to go to themorganreport.com and get on our free email list. I'll be updating that. I just came back from an emergency trip to Vancouver, BC, and there is a new technology coming out that's very green. That's probably going to be as big a move into the industry as cyanide heap leaching was in the 1980s. This is a benign situation with a solution that basically precipitates out precious metals at a very high degree. I mean, where you get a huge recovery. And again, it's environmentally friendly. It's probably, it would be used in the mining area, but it'll probably be used in other industries in a much larger way than it'll be used in mining, believe it or not. So I'll be making that report available over the next month or so, kind of a cursory look for people that are interested in these kind of new leading technologies, which is very fascinating. I mean, again, coming back full circle, you know, it's not all doom and gloom. People are inventive. They come up with new ideas all the time. People want better lives, and you can't hold back the human spirit. So, you know, as one thing goes down, another comes up, and, you know, a financial reset may, from a spiritual perspective, be what's required for all of us to kind of get back on track, regroup, regather, and become, let's say, less divisive, more of, you know, we're Americans or we're whatever nation state we're in, and less infighting, you know, more being grateful for what we have and how we can work together than what divides us. I think that's very much needed right now.
Definitely. Well, David Morgan, once again, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.